Hey everybody, the Slackademics debut album, Pass Fail, is finally out. Here's a sampler of the G chords used in all 13 of the tracks on the album. There are two songs that don't have a G chord. Can you tell which ones I had to pitch shift? Okay, maybe just go listen to the album. It's all dudes. We got the dudes.
Bro.
The dudes like their harmony ignoring.
They love it. They love it famously. That's like all they ever talk about anymore.
The Killers is a very aggressive, feels like a macho kind of band name too.
And they're not that macho.
Yeah. I don't know. Are they? They're not that macho,
no.
Right? They don't feel super macho.
No,
it's not like aggro.
It's not like Bruce Springsteen. Give me a break.
Yeah, but Bruce has got heart to him though.
But he's not macho, I think. Like,
is he? I don't know.
Yes.
Everybody's got a hungry heart.
Everybody's got a hungry heart.
Is that
yeah, dude.
Is that what you think it is?
Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Nevermind the Music. What are we going to talk about today, Marcus? It's not your name.
Thanks. My Christian name. No, it's not actually. I am just a Mark with a K. Hard stop.
Hard stop.
What do you think, Nicole, of sustained weird chords starting off a song?
I generally dislike sustained weird chords.
You like a choppy chord.
I like a choppy chord.
Okay,
snappy and choppy.
Examples, listeners, you can see if you agree. Here Comes Your Man, The Pixies, 1989.
I do love that song, but I don't like the way it starts.
You don't like the Hendrix chord, the Hitchcock chord, the sharp nine. Yeah. Okay.
No.
All right. Tell It Like It Is, 1966, Aaron Neville. We got a C augmented on the piano here.
All right.
If you want something to play with, go and...
I actually don't mind that as much. I think an augmented I can get behind because it's like leading. You want the resolution of it, and the resolution comes in when he starts singing. That's
yeah,
how I hear it.
Yeah, you don't feel that way in the Here Comes Your Man opening.
No, I feel like it's just busy work.
Okay, how about this chord? It's kind of unclear what this is. It's sort of a D minor 11, but it's like the piano plays one thing and the guitar plays another. 1964, A Hard Day's Night, The Beatles.
It's been a hard
actually like that one too. I think you're changing my mind by listening to examples. I have such a strong opinion, but I was just ignorant.
Okay.
Hard Day's Night is great. That's iconic and it like makes the song almost.
I love how you're like, I had a strong opinion before I really knew what we were talking about. Yeah. But as I learned, my opinion mellowed out. Yeah.
Always
good to start with the strong opinion without the context.
I just want to be contrary. I just want to like be in disagreement with you.
Okay. So speaking of contrary, what about the opposite of that? When the drums or like choppy guitar strings hit and start off a song. Are you a fan of that?
My instinct is saying no.
It's kind of opposite.
But I think I might be.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I might be.
Green Day, 1997. Nice Guys Finish Last.
I like that.
You
it's
like
getting
it.
Me like pumped up for the song.
Pumps you up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Unkind, 1996. Soundgarden.
Yes, also like that.
We get the drum and we get the guitar going.
Yes, I'm ready to go.
We're going for three for three.
Okay.
Controversial artists, got a lot of hate for My Love. 1999, Jimmy Eat World, Clarity from the album Clarity.
I like that too.
Okay, so you are a fan of the chukka chukka opening?
I like
it more than the
chukka.
Opening.
Yes.
Yeah. What about when both of them happen?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out if I like it or not. It's really dissonant to me, and I generally don't like things that have like too many noises going on at once because I get overstimulated.
Right.
So I felt a little bit of that like stimminess to it that didn't really sit well with me.
Because it starts with the E major add six add nine chord, but then with the drums and the guitar.
Yeah. And at first it took me a little while to like orient to what I was listening to.
Because it could be just the chord. Bring, ba-na-na-na. Or it could just be cha-cha-chicka-ba-na-na-na-na. Would one of those be better? Or do you think the combo?
It's the combo for me.
Too much for me. All right, everybody. We are talking about Las Vegas' own The Killers and their 2006 hit, When You Were Young.
He doesn't look a thing like Jesus, but he talks like a gentleman.
Should we shout out some artists who are also from Las Vegas?
I was just going to say, like, who's from Las Vegas?
Like people, probably.
I'm sure. But you think of Las Vegas as like a transient place. But...
place you visit, but don't live.
Who,
right?
What are some other, I mean, Elvis Presley's not from Las Vegas. You just like, I attach him to
Las
Vegas.
I think there are a lot of artists you associate with Vegas, but from the Crystal Method.
Oh.
Okay. Electronica. Five Finger Death Punch?
No.
No. No, they're not from like Panic at the Disco.
Apparently, Panic.
At least the main guy. Panic!
Yeah.
Is from... What is his name? I can't remember his name.
I like him, though.
Sort of Imagine Dragons, but I think Imagine Dragons started in Utah and relocated to the big city of Vegas.
Wouldn't it be funny,
too, which is like the opposite.
If there was another band fully from Las Vegas named Sort of Imagine Dragons, like they're not quite, but that's just like the band name.
But I say like sort of because they're actually like Utah, but I think they like gathered their steam.
They like,
you know, there's a lot of bands like, oh, from random town, moved to LA where they
right. Like I say I'm from Boston, but I didn't like grow up in Boston city limits.
No, I don't even mean that. I mean, like, you didn't relocate, though. You're from the burbs, but you're from the Boston area. Mm-hmm. I don't think Imagine Dragons are from Clark County and they moved to Vegas. I think they're from a different state. But when they're like, hey, guys, let's make this band a thing.
That's where it
happens. We got to get out of small town Utah or whatever. And they went to Vegas as like their hub, which I think a lot of people that happens. But it's New York City or Los Angeles.
Right.
And for them, the bridge step was
but
like
Imagine Dragons. Moved to Las Vegas while sort of Imagine Dragons was from Las Vegas.
That's right. That's right. Exactly right.
Got it.
And the Las Vegas Symphony Orchestra.
Yeah, that's
they're you could say they're sort of from Las
Vegas.
They're
sort of from Las Vegas. The sort of.
So this song is from the 2006 album Sam's Town, which I think is kind of about Vegas because Sam's Town Hotel and Gambling Hall is like a old school hotel casino kind of
right.
thing. I don't know much about the like I've heard this record, but the lyrical themes I don't follow. I don't think it's a concept album or anything, but there's a lot of allusions to the city, I guess. But this is their second biggest hit. What would you think their number one is?
I don't know, Mark. Why
is this
don't
one's
you
number
just
14
me?
On the on the top 100? No, I'm not going to just tell you what if you think The Killers. What song do you think? And I'm assuming this isn't like your cup of tea, really?
It isn't really. And I'm not going to know the name of it. But as soon as you play
really?
It, you'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. That one.
I'm not going to play it.
You're not going to?
Figure it out. Fine, I'll play it.
Well, somebody told me.
No, I'm wrong.
Oh, not that one.
I don't even have it queued up because it doesn't matter. But, Mr. Brightside, though.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Brightside.
That's the one.
I love that song.
I like literally just started playing the next track and it's like, no, that's a song I actually.
Can I tell you, controversial, they all kind of sound the same to me.
Okay. Really? So like, okay.
I don't know enough about them.
So
my friend Andy, if he's listening, is going to be so mad. He's such a big Killers fan. And I know you're a big Killers fan too.
I like the Killers. So yeah. I really only know like, I know the first two records pretty well. Mm-hmm. The third record I've heard a little bit, but they have stuff after that that I haven't really heard at all.
Right.
I've heard the songs, but I haven't done a deep dive past just those first three
Imagine
albums.
Imagine if they transitioned to like a ukulele folk band or something and you're really missing it. If they're the new Nickel Creek and you don't even know.
Nickel Creek isn't a ukulele.
I don't know,
Mark. Mandolin folk
mandolin.
Band.
They're so, the same thing.
And don't make fun of Nickel Creek.
No, I'm not making fun of them.
Don't knock it
until
you've tried
it. Awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome. So this track, When You Were Young, the track I want to focus on, hit 14 on the Hot 100, but number one on the rock chart. So
okay.
It was like a rock hit. Mr. Brightside narrowly beat it. Also number one on the rock, but number 10 on the top 40.
Mm-hmm.
But the other songs, you say all sound the same. Like Human is a very different kind of synth pop, weird grammar in there. number 32, and Somebody Told Me, number 51. So that's kind of 51? Their big...
51?
Yeah, that one felt huge, though.
Right.
I mean, I think we could say, like, stylistically, when you say they all sound the same, you could also say they have a style, right?
I guess.
You could say that they are echoing a style, I
yes,
think.
Yes, so I would say that.
I would say, I think of this kind of as New Order-y, In Excess type new wave or dance rock. So like something like Somebody Told Me, which I already mentioned, would fit that bill. This is from 2003.
Well, somebody told me you had a boyfriend who looked like a girlfriend that I had in February of last year. It's not confidential. I've got potential.
I like that robot break.
Yeah, the synth.
Beep, bop, boop, boop.
And then, like, they kept that going, I think. And in their third record, the song Spaceman, 2008, I don't know if you know this one, similar, I would say, like, new wave, synth pop kind of vibe.
And you know I might just home too far from the floor this time, cause they're calling me by my name, and there's different white light beams disregarding balls and satellites. And that was the turning point.
I actually like that a lot.
Actually, yeah, it's
actually,
good.
It turns out the Killers might be really good.
But it's similar, like, I think that's similar sound, we're kind of 80s nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like I said, I haven't dove into their new albums, but I listened to their newer singles, and some of those tunes are feel much, very much in that kind of world. So this is a tune from 2020. It's called Caution, and feels kind of 80s, but there's literally a guitar solo from Lindsey Buckingham.
Oh.
Remember back to our episode recently about
remember Lindsey Buckingham,
Fleetwood Mac. So there's maybe some 70s in there too. Mm-hmm. Take a listen.
On a map,
I bet they would be really good live. Do people say that about the Killers? That they're really good
live? I
bet
dive
that they would be very, very good live.
Probably pretty fun.
Yeah.
We're going to hear a live thing a little bit later,
cool.
though.
Cool.
I will play something.
Fun.
But there is a little 70s in there. And so I think that what's interesting about Samstown, and this is going to lead sort of back to this song, is it feels like they took a little break. Maybe I feel like there's 80s in this song, but also something else. So if you listen to this, what does this remind you of?
It reminds me of Hard Day's Night.
But, oh, that's interesting because of the chord.
Because of the chord.
Yeah. So,
is
sorry,
it the same chord?
I shouldn't have. No, it's a different chord.
Okay.
I should. It's actually very similar, though.
Yes.
It has a similar voicing if you think of what George is playing. But there's it doesn't have the Hard Day's Night chord's weirder, even.
Mm-hmm.
But it
I think
because
awesome
I actually played,
at,
I had to learn how to play part of this for part of what I want to get into. So I'm like, actually, it is similar.
Yeah, I'm awesome.
Good
Mark.
Ear. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a good ear.
But
you heard it here first.
But there's also not only the 80s and apparently the mid 60s.
Mm.
This has a little bit of Heartland rock.
Okay.
This kind of thing going on. Especially that riff.
So and it is like nostalgia, no matter how you frame it. If it's Hard Day's Night or this Heartland Rock, it is like, it brings
stuff
you back to this nostalgia point.
Yeah, that was, of course, Born to Run from 1975 from Springsteen.
He's great, huh?
Bruce?
Yeah.
Boss? Yeah, we can. I think, so it's interesting because we're talking, there's a couple Born to Run references in this, but Born to Run is also a song I kind of want to do.
Oh, cool.
So
we've only talked about Bruce Springsteen one time on this podcast.
What were we even talking about?
We're talking about Christmas music.
Oh, that's right. You brought him in. Santa Claus is Coming to Town or something like that.
So
that's
good.
Right. That was a good one. Nice screamy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we might come back to Bruce, and I think we might even come back to that song because
cool.
I love this song. But Are you a fan of Heartland Rock, that kind of like blue collar working class?
Yeah,
you
for seem sure. like
you seem like every now and then it's worth putting down the acoustic guitar and rocking a little more and singing about the struggles of the working man and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And that bam 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 bam, and there's like glockenspiel in that song. That it feels kind of, you know, the ding dings.
Mm-hmm, the ding dings. Thanks.
That happens in this song too. It feels like, even though they kind of started from this new wave frame, this album dips into the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I keep saying that term, Heartland Rock. I'm thinking, like, I don't know if that's a term that you know or that's just music nerd stuff.
I can, like figure it out.
Like that or Tom Petty or John Mellencamp.
It's like not Americana, that's different, but this is like a like really American rock.
Kind of like Americana rock.
Accessible,
right?
Yeah.
But like, and it's also like, there's like a blue collar to it, like the stories are like storytelling about real people. And like,
I'm trying to think if there's any more modern examples of that. I mean, I guess Tom Petty and Bruce Springsteen, they're still modern, but any
more modern than the Killers, you mean?
Yeah, I mean the Foo Fighters maybe.
No,
not
I don't
even.
Think so. No, what's a modern,
just good old fashioned rock music, good old fashioned rock
so
band.
I feel like a lot of times people think like what you like, think of like dad rock bands,
yeah,
like Dawes or whatever, those bands. And I know that's like a decade ago, that sounds like that, but I don't think we group them in the same category. It's not like a movement in the same way, right? Okay. This song, produced by Flood has come up in this podcast way back when we did Depeche Mode.
Okay.
He being the producer named Flood, not the concept of water overflowing.
Okay,
produced,
got it.
Yeah, because just to be clear,
I'm on
produced,
it.
What's the song we did? I can't even remember. Enjoy the Silence.
Oh, I have literally no memory of a Depeche Mode episode.
Oh my God.
That was
song,
like our first or second
that's
episode.
Like our, that's like, no, I don't know about that, but it's probably in the first 10.
Yeah.
When our episodes were like 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
When I was like, oh, I have so much I want to say, but I shouldn't waste time on the podcast.
Turns out this is exactly what we're trying to do.
And also, Alan Mulder co-produced this, frequent collaborator. I should shout out, I haven't watched it for years, but have you heard the Song Exploder podcast?
No.
Where they like, they're deep diving a song similarly to us, but in a totally different way, where like the host will have the person talk through the like recording process and the tracks.
Oh, that's very cool.
But it's not an interview. It's just like a
director's cut
voiceover of them almost commentary tracking.
Yeah.
And it'll play like just the bass. And then they'll say like, oh, this synth part took us really. So there's like a brief, I don't know if it's like it's a Netflix series. I think they did like one season of Song Exploder as a Netflix series. And they do a lot of different stuff, but one of them is this song. And it's cool to see them like tweaking the synths and stuff to try to get the sounds right. I enjoyed that. It's a memorable one from that show. Okay, so what I want to talk about really is the melody and its relationship with the chords. It's another one of those. I don't really need to get into the Springsteen of all of it, but maybe that'll come up a little bit. So I don't know if we want to kind of like dive in and then you can reflect later about the brain stuff. I don't know if you've got something you want to
more like
cut me
less
off.
Less like brain stuff, but more like developmental psych, specifically to some common trends we see in like adolescent development. So we can like talk about your stuff and then talk about my stuff. I
truly have no idea where that would be coming from in this. So I'm curious. The lyrics of this song kind of baffle me, actually.
Yeah.
And we can talk about it. The music. Did you watch the music video?
Mm-mm,
it's like a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, you got something when you turn it on. And it starts with no music. It's like I watched the Luther Kendrick Lamar video recently. And it's like when you turn that thing on and the thing's a minute
like
and a half longer than the runtime of the song, you're like, ooh, it's like Thriller. Here
There's
we go.
There's like a All title right. card, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And like a whole credits bit.
Well,
okay.
No, I was thinking about like the song title when we were young and this idea of how we idealize certain things in our youth. Or we look forward to the future with like a romantic idea when we're young.
Who may or may not look like Jesus.
And you may or may not look like Jesus, but who's to say? You know, it's all relative.
Right. Well, let's come back to it then.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
So I want to talk about essentially a melody that ignores the chord progression. And it creates a cool tension and also a catchiness. It makes it memorable and maybe contributes to the sort of 80s and 70s of it all. But let's first just get this chord progression in our heads. And that's not the whole song, but it's a lot of the song.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of the song. And we don't hear it full gusto like that with the strummy, crunchy guitars throughout the whole song. But even when we just hear the bass, it's implying those chords, right? Let's listen to the start of where the melody, aside from the meow, 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 mm-hmm. Springsteen guitar melody comes in with the doubling of the keyboards and stuff. Let's listen to the vocal melody fitting in with this. So this is the first part of the first verse of the song.
You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful boy to...
My question for you, if the line there is, you sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful boy to... We're obviously not letting him finish the line.
Yeah.
Which notes, which parts of the melody feel unstable to you? Listen again. Listen again. You can just call out which words or whatever.
You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful boy to...
For me, it's your feels Ooh. Unstable. Your heartache.
Heart. Heartache. Definitely, yeah.
Like that.
Ooh, your heartache.
You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful boy to...
What if I told you, what if I told you that of that first line,
mm-hmm.
heart is one of the only notes in the chord.
That's wild.
You sit there in your, the entire thing is not actually a part of that chord we're playing.
Okay.
And heartache is, even though it feels kind of weird there. Listen again.
You sit there in your heartache, waiting Same on there. Some beautiful boy to...
So when we hear like heart and beautiful, normally in a melody, those notes, that's a C sharp, by the way, in this song, we would think of those as the ones that are out of the chord. They feel like they don't fit. If it's waiting on some beautiful boy to... Those are the ones that are moving from point to point, right? And normally, those are what we call non-harmonic tones.
Okay.
And a non-harmonic tone means it's not a part of the harmony. So like if I'm playing a C, the C has in it a C, an E, and a G. Those are the three notes in
Got
a C
it.
Chord. So if I'm singing like a D or a B, I am a non-harmonic tone. I'm doing something else. And one of these days I'll do an episode where I'm just like sharing awesome examples of non-harmonic tones. But those notes sound like they don't fit with the chords, but actually here they do. They're the only ones that do, which is super weird.
It's weird.
You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful boy to...
And I'll illustrate that in a second, but as a contrast, here's another Killers tune. This is Human, more I would say 80s-ish. And the notes in this melody, almost all of them fit squarely within the chord.
Are we human? Or are we dancer? My sign is vital.
And the moving notes are the ones that don't.
My hands are cold.
So like, my hands are cold. It's that middle note.
Mm.
That middle note is the one that's weird. The long notes all fit with the chord. In other words, the melody makes sense for the chord progression.
Right. And I'm noticing when you're playing these examples, for me, when we were young, it's the Killer song that I most know. I don't really know a lot of their other stuff. So when I'm hearing more of it, I'm noticing it might not be the notes, but it might be what he's doing with his voice that sounds different to me and when we were young. When I
Interesting.
Like, his tone in the last song, the second song you just played, was so crisp and clean, and you realize, like, oh, he's actually, like, a really, he's a good vocalist. Like, he's got a nice singing voice. And then when we were young, it's like his, it's, I always thought it was the his voice, but now I'm learning that it's the chords he's singing or the notes he's singing.
He's clashing with the chords.
Right.
And his voice
and that's
is very
giving
wobbly.
That, yeah.
Now, he's not doing the Springsteen grit. I don't think he's got the same kind of husky shout in most parts of his voice, but he's doing like a wobble.
Right.
Listen later, we'll hear that. The devil's water, it ain't so sweet. Like, he's doing a thing that actually makes him fit with the chord even less.
Right.
Because he's out of tune.
And I always
vibrato
thought it
makes
was,
you out
that
of tune.
Was just his voice, but now I'm
he's
learning
doing
that
thing.
Like he's doing something on purpose.
And I think
purpose.
He's kind of trying to evoke the sort of 70s rock vocal without the grit.
Right.
Ooh, grit is like the word of the season,
I
by
love,
the way.
I love you, that. I use
you,
grit a lot.
You
I'm
used
doing a lot
it of in our... That's like the point of our Blondie episode.
Yeah.
And then like ever since then, when I'm editing, it's like, oh, it's grit. And then you're on the Lorehounds and it's like, she said grit. And it's like,
I'm really into grit and resilience.
The name of the season two of our show.
And you
is
know
grit.
What else I was thinking about voices that I was listening to your band Slackademic's new
Ooh,
album.
Sweet.
And it's hard for me to believe that you're singing. because it sounds so different. Like your speaking voice and your singing voice sound so different. Do people say that to you?
I sent my brother. Hi, brother. I don't think you're listening, but I sent my, gosh, was it this band? I think it was this band when we did our EP a couple of years ago. I sent it to him and he was like, I thought you were the singer of this
band.
That's
what I keep thinking. Like I hear like the plugs, you know, before listeners, I'm sure when you started this episode, there was like a nod to check out Mark's latest,
I'll stop the panhandling eventually.
I'm listening to it, I was like, that can't be him. I thought he was the singer, but your singing voice sounds so different.
That's funny. Yeah.
Do you do that on purpose or is it just like how it goes for you? And is everyone like that? Like, is my singing voice so different than my speaking voice?
Some people sound like they talk. I think, definitely. So
you don't.
I'm kind of doing an affectation a little bit, but it's like, it's so automatic to me now.
It's like unrecognizable. And I have your voice in my ear a lot. And then I hear you in this, and it sounds great, but I always give it a second take. Like, that, is that really Mark? And then once I dial into it, I like tune my ear. I'm like, all right, I can hear you in there.
Maybe we got to get into that another time. There's really something there. That's funny.
It's fascinating.
Okay.
But
so,
the album sounds great. You guys should listen to it.
Sweet. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so what's the deal with this song? What am I getting at? Why is this different? He is singing, Brandon, by the way, Brandon Flowers, not to be confused with the NFL cornerback, former cornerback, maybe Brandon Flowers.
I don't know.
The vocalist and one of the songwriters in The Killers. By the way, they're The Killers.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it feel like if they were killers, it would be more menacing? Like The Killers feels more like fun,
I guess.
Yeah. There's some, this is it. Apparently I mentioned New Order. New Order was in my brain because apparently there's a New Order, like a latter day New Order song, like from the 2000s or something that has a fictional band in the music video.
Okay.
And that fictional band is called The Killers. And I'm like, guys, that is really intensely detailed watching of a music video to notice the thing on the drummer's kick drum.
Does it predate The Killers?
Yeah. Like a year or two before this band formed, there's like a New Order tune, like way after New Order is, they were not in their peak doing like Blue Monday and all that. They have a song called Crystal. And there's just like a band playing in the video and on the kick drum, you know how it says like the Beatles or whatever, it says The Killers. And someone was like super eagle-eyed. I love this song, everybody. Freeze frame. Watch for 1 second. Wow. Oh, they're called The Killers. Let's name our band. Like very specific.
And that was where they got the band name, The Killers.
That's what it is. It's really a New Order reference, which makes sense because they're doing this kind of synthy but guitar music. I guess New Order is less guitar-y than them.
Well,
but,
cool.
So anyways, what they're doing, and maybe this is something New Order would do, this song is in B major.
Okay.
So normally when I talk about non-harmonic tones, I mentioned like, oh, you're playing a C, sing the notes in C. The deal with this song is Brandon is always basically going to sing the notes in the B major chord. B, D sharp, or F sharp.
Okay.
And the B major chord is very rare in this song. It's only one of, not very rare. This isn't like the Fleetwood Mac tune where the key note never happens. No, it's of the like four chords in the riff, it happens for like a second. It's like 1/4.
So what chords are they playing then?
Well, a version. I mean, we're going to get into it a little bit. Okay. But they're playing like an E, an F sharp, a G sharp, and then sometimes the B.
Mm-hmm.
But his vocal is always outlining the B chord, almost always. And that feels natural to us, even though in a lot of cases, it really clashes. So take a listen to this one more time. And I know we are hitting this section a lot, but when he sings You Sit There, he's on a D sharp, which is a part of our B chord. But in the E chord, it's a half step away from the root. It's a dissonant seventh, right? And when he sings Heartache, that's actually fitting perfectly with those two chords, the F sharp and the G sharp chord. It's the notes that he lingers on don't fit. So the note that you would think would be stable is actually unstable.
Mm.
And let's listen to where he goes next. This time, listen, where does it sound like his melody note doesn't fit with the chord? Before it was heartache. Which words feel like they stick out as off of the harmony.
To save you from your old ways.
Old ways?
Old ways.
I'm just trying to mimic the previous phrase because I was
but,
wrong.
But listen
before.
Also, okay. which other notes?
To save you from your old ways.
You're looking at me like you need me to say something. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
No, but
it's,
so
for
just,
me, it's like your old ways. It's the same
yeah,
thing as
okay.
the previous phrase.
To me,
for me,
I hear save as yeah. being weird.
To save you from yeah. your old ways.
Save you. Save you.
Yeah,
it's a
I
neighbor
get that.
Tone, right? Or mm-hmm. sorry, it's. We'll get into this later. It's an appoggiatura.
Oh, I love
but
that.
But it's actually the root of the chord.
Okay, cool.
So it is the note that should feel the most stable, and it feels weird. And old ways mm-hmm. are in the chord solidly also.
Okay.
So the notes that feel like they're off are the ones that should feel on. It's opposite.
To save you from your old ways.
Save you from your... It sounds like weird, good, but yeah. it's good, weird, good, weird.
It's very dissonant.
Old ways, but it's the opposite of what actually our ear somehow, and I'll get into how, our ear is acclimated that anything that isn't in the B chord feels wrong, which means the notes that are actually in the chord feel wrong, and the notes that are out of the chord feel right. It's the opposite. They've drilled down for some reason. B major is what we want, not E, F sharp, G sharp, these chords they're playing.
Got it.
Okay, so I'm not losing you.
No, I absolutely get it.
It's,
and I feel like we're like really making the point
yeah,
here.
Because yeah. I think this might not be easy to hear, which
no,
is why
it's,
I'm,
it's not easy to
should
hear.
Should I cut like half of it?
No, it's hard to hear it because it's meant to, like the way the song's written, it's meant to be uniform. Like you can hear it because your ear is very well trained, but the average listener is not going to like pick up on it because we're meant to hear it as a whole, a big picture.
It also goes by so fast.
And it goes by right. so fast. And this just like adds tension and like this distance to the song, which makes the song rich and interesting.
Right.
Like that's all the average listener is hearing.
So let's talk for a minute about why.
Okay.
Right. So we already said like the correct notes, even though they don't fit with the chord, are the notes that are a part of B major.
Mm-hmm.
B, D sharp, F sharp. But only one of the chords is actually that B major chord, right?
Right.
So it's the homeness of that chord, the ta-da, we're at home of B major, overrides the actual tension it might have with the chord progression. So if we listen back to the actual chords one more time, just played by, let's say, the full strummy guitar. I'm going to play it. This is me playing.
Okay, too. I love
so
that.
Listeners, appreciate it. I had to downtune my guitar after
wow,
that for this. It was quite annoying.
That's a lot of work.
So much easier for me just to record on the piano. But I'm playing, this is also my bass debut on this podcast.
Couldn't you just
I'm playing
play
the bass
it
also.
And then put it into the computer machine and like downtune it on the computer?
Yeah, maybe it would sound weird, but also
okay.
I can downtune a half step. It's all right.
I don't know.
But I'm also playing bass because we need the bass to
never
fit with this
play
too.
Bass.
Never play bass.
Mm-mm.
So. This is me playing it just so we can strip away the synths and the drums just here. This is the chords the way they play it. Ooh, too much reverb, Mark. Too much
I
reverb.
I love it. You sound so good, Mark. You're like a killer.
I am a killer, not
yeah.
killer, right?
Yeah.
'Cause that would be threatening. So the weird thing about this, they're playing it in a weird way that actually is dissonant at its core that I think supports the melody doing what it does. Let me play this. This is the bass with the guitar playing just one note, F sharp, not the whole chord, just one note.
Ugh.
Do you hear how sometimes that
yes.
note is wrong
mm-hmm.
and then sometimes it's right? Wrong, right, wrong. Right. Wrong.
Absolutely.
That note is in every single one of the chords the guitar plays. So when I play the way they play it, it's the regular chords with that note added. You don't hear it as loud because it's just one of the strings. These aren't actually the real chords. The chords go E, F sharp, G sharp minor, B. But this is if I just played those chords without the weird extra note. compared to how it actually goes with the weird note added.
Yeah, I think
which one's weirder?
Honestly, and you're not going to like this, to me, they sound similar.
Okay.
But the second version sounds more on brand to what I have in my head as a killer song.
So I'm going to, let's just listen to just the first chord. Here's the real chord. Compare.
Yeah, there's like an extra, like something scratching in the background.
One note that's supposed to be there is changed to be a wrong note. Right.
Yeah.
And what that note is this note. That F sharp. What's the deal with that F sharp? That F sharp is a part of the B chord.
Yeah.
It is not a part of the E chord. It's barely a part of the G sharp chord. It doesn't really belong in some of these chords. And so why that F sharp? Because the F sharp is a part of the B chord. And so even though it's not the B, they're playing that and it reminds us of the B. What if they had done just played the B chord against the bass?
Yeah, let's
this
hear
is
it.
The actual full B chord, not the F sharp.
It doesn't even sound like the same song.
It's weird.
It's weird.
But by playing this, that note with the other notes, we can kind of make our brains think of this. So if I play the whole B chord and then have the bass play its thing, it sounds wrong, but I can imply it.
Yeah.
And that one wrong note in the keyboards and the guitars, what note is it? No. Sorry, I'm finding it. That note implies that B chord and what it sets up. What I'm arguing is then our brain starts to think of the B chord as right. So when Brandon's singing, you sit there, that sounds good, but to save you sounds weird,
right,
even though it is in the chord. And own ways is in the chord, but feels weird because it's not a part of the B chord.
Because we are like kind of conditioned to think of it one way. So when he plays it, to say the correct way is the wrong thing to say, but the way that's like within the chord, it sounds like it's wrong because we're so used to hearing it the other way. Is that, do I have
yes,
it right?
Totally.
Okay.
And if I play just the first verse, everybody think the notes that should make sense are bum, bum, bum. Mm-hmm. Whenever he hits one of those three notes, we feel at home. Whenever he does not hit one of those notes, it feels not at rest, even though the chords don't demand those three notes at all.
You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some beautiful boy to save you from your old ways.
I cut it there just because that doesn't have a melody.
Oh, it's
basically
getting really into it.
Yeah, that's a good one, though. So is this also what happens in the chorus? And the answer is yes. He doesn't look a thing like Jesus. He doesn't look a thing like seems unstable and it needs to resolve. Listen.
He doesn't look a thing like Jesus, buddy.
But he doesn't look a thing is the root of the chord. Why does it feel unsatisfying? Because it's an E and it needs to go down to our D sharp.
Right.
Because E is not a part of B. Let's listen to that whole section.
He doesn't look a thing like Jesus, buddy. Talks like
you know,
and what's going on with the synth in the background? Is that in the B chord? Is that in like the home chord, like where it's supposed to be?
So I'm figuring it out, everybody. I didn't chart out. I didn't dictate.
Because like to me, that sounds like it's like lifting above everything in the way that feels very consonant.
So the notes that don't exist. So ba-da-ba-ba, that is like almost all in the E chord,
right,
but the only ones that fit with the B, ba-da-ba-ba, that ba note fits with the B chord, but not with the E chord we're actually hearing.
Because when I hear that note, I feel like I'm so somatic, but I feel like warm and fuzzy.
Right.
When I hear that one part of that.
What about ba-da-ba-ba-ba?
Something that I feel like a little bit tense about it.
That one is not a part of B.
Yeah, I feel like a little bit,
but it is a part of the chord that you're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the weird thing. That duh, that's the seven in the scale.
Yeah.
It's really clashy with the B chord, but it is in that moment, it's completely in the F sharp chord we're hearing.
You're young.
Do, do, that's also not in the B
and
chord.
That part is like kind of mimicking what he's doing with the melody, in that like the intervals that he's using in the melody matches to me what's happening in that synth part.
Yes, they're similarly both just the B chord with notes that are too high attached to it. So they're both kind of jumping around the same chord, except the synth chord uses also that do, that like A sharp, that's really clashy, right? Even though it's not clashy with the chord, it's just clashy with the B in our head, right? It's sort of like whatever happens on the chords, the B major notes are the only ones that are correct. B, D sharp, and F sharp. Even though that does not make sense with the way even this band will often write their melodies,
right?
So if we think on other examples in other music, without necessarily them having to be obsessed with one chord, like three notes like this one, we do see in pop songs often a melody that is very disjointed from the harmonies, where the melody might continue doing a thing like this one does, even when the chords are changing underneath it. Like it's ignoring that, right? And that instability can be nice. On our Eras playlist, you played, what's the Scottish supergroup?
The Reindeer Section?
The Reindeer Section, that guy.
Yes.
The guy from...
Postal Service.
Snow Patrol.
Yeah.
So this is Snow Patrol.
Nice.
What's his name?
Gary Lightbody.
Wow, thank you.
I can't believe I remember
that.
Wow.
This is How to Be Dead, 2003. A very small set of melodic notes that repeat even when the chords change in a way that doesn't really fit those melody notes. Where you've had me for hours till I'm sure what I want. Tell me what's up, I won't stop, no way.
Yeah, it's like just a little bit disconnected in a way that like, if with the Killers, adds so much tension and so much texture, but here it like strips it down in a way that feels vulnerable to
me. It's like floating to me.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a beautiful song.
Another one. Yeah, it's great. Another one, a podcast alum. Everybody Wants to Rule the World, 1985, Tears for Fears.
Tears for Fears, with the number four, right?
No, definitely not. It's not a Prince tune. So this song, the melody has a few notes that fit in the key, but really don't follow what the chords are. And most of the sections of this song will repeat those notes, even when the chords are changing.
The same thing's happening for me here as it did when we first started breaking down when we were young, in that I always assumed it was just the like timbre of the person singing's voice and not like the notes they're singing. I just thought it's how their voice was that seemed a little bit like dissonant to me, but I guess not.
No, it's 100%. Well, I'm not saying it's not Roland's vocal tone or whatever.
You just said 100%, so.
But, wait, is that Roland? I think that actually might be Kurt. Look at me on first name basis with the guys from Tears for Fears.
You guys are so close.
Da, 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 those two notes, that perfect fifth leap. We're going through four chords there, each a step apart. Those notes can't be in all four of those chords. It's not possible, right? So it's tense. It's very tense.
Yeah, it's not just
and
their
most of
voices,
the melody is that.
It's the notes.
Right, yeah. Okay, one more example.
Okay.
This time a descending scale, so not a jump like that, over three changing chords. This is Daft Punk, 2013, Lose Yourself to Dance.
Nice.
Pharrell, one of his cameos on that record. I know you don't get a chance to take a break this often. I know your life is speeding and it isn't stopping. Here, take my shirt and just go ahead and wipe up all the sweat, 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 lose yourself to dance.
Yeah, there's like this tension. For sure.
And there, I think, similar to the song we're listening to, Nile Rodgers is doing that slinky funk guitar part, and his part barely changes. Even though the chords are changing, the guitar doesn't change much, which gives sort of the vocal permission to also not change.
No female examples, huh?
No female examples of this jumping into my head. You got some female examples?
No, not even. I think maybe the females don't need this level of like transpositional acrobatics.
What is it about, what do these three songs have in common? I got different eras. I got different nationalities. I got Brits. I got Scottish people. I got Frenchmen. But it's all dudes. We got the dudes. The dudes like their harmony ignoring.
They love it. They love it famously. That's like all they ever talk about anymore.
The Killers is a very aggressive feels like a macho kind of band name too.
And they're not that macho.
Yeah. I don't know. Are they? They're not that macho,
no.
Right? They don't feel super macho.
No,
it's not like aggro.
It's not like Bruce Springsteen. Give me a break.
Yeah, but Bruce has got heart to him, though.
But he's not macho, I think. Like,
is he? I don't know.
Yes.
Everybody's got a hungry heart?
Everybody's got a hungry heart.
Is that
yeah, dude.
Is that what you think it is?
No, right. I don't know. I just, I think of Bruce Springsteen. I think of macho, for sure. Blue collar.
All right, we'll come back to Bruce in a couple minutes. So wrapping up my deal here, musically here.
Sounds good.
Does this persist for the rest of this song? So later in the song, we have this post-chorus, and it's more of the same, spoiler. The sometimes, when he says, sometimes you close your eyes, some does not fit with the chord, but it is a part of our B chord. So it sounds nice and cozy, at least to my ear. And then it chills on the B at the end of the phrase, even though the chords don't all have B in them.
And sometimes you close your eyes and see the place where you used to live when you were young.
Yeah, that when you were young, he's on the B, even though there's an F sharp with the should not have that B in it. Outlining our main chord again. Is that too many examples? No, not enough examples.
Never.
Here's
enough.
The guitar solo we're about to hear. It's only really one note. And guess what? It's the D sharp, which does not fit with our chords very well. It's like they're kind of making fun of us a little bit, right?
It's like they're making fun of one of us.
God damn it. Okay, let's break it up. Here is a scale. They play an actual kind of scale, and it emphasizes a different chord, the F sharp. And this sticks out as being super different. This is a full, rich harmony with the A sharp in it. We haven't heard this sound at all. I think it's a stylistic reference. Take a listen. Does that remind you of anything?
It reminds me of Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say this.
I guess it's like exactly the same thing.
It's the same as that, but I think this is supposed to be a reference to Born to Run Again.
Yeah.
Huh. Which goes a little further, right?
Are we all just like stealing each other's stuff? Is that like all the music is?
I think that's all that music is.
Fudge.
I will say they consummated the relationship with Bruce. They actually have
I don't think you're using that, right?
I don't think that means what you think it means. So in 2025, they released a 3-song live EP.
Okay.
With Bruce.
Oh, very cool.
So they do 2 Springsteen songs and one of their tunes.
What Springsteen songs? Do they do Santa Claus is Coming to Town?
That's not a Bruce Springsteen song. What is the other song they
what
do?
Is? There's no way to tell.
No, hang on.
Only there is a way.
Okay.
He's Googling it.
So they do Dustland, Badlands, and Born to Run.
All these land songs.
Yeah, lots of.
Are they all Bruce Springsteen songs? Search up that. Search it up. That's what the kids say now. Stop. Search it up.
That is what the kids
Isn't
say.
Isn't that wild?
It's really freaking weird.
Search it up.
Search it up. Like they're mixing.
Yeah. I don't know, I'm going to search it up.
Badlands and Born to Run are Springsteen tunes. Mm-hmm. Dustland is a similarly themed, apparently. Killer's track.
Sounds good.
But so, and they do actual Born to Run live with him.
Can we please hear it?
Yeah.
And is that Brandon Flowers
That
singing?
Was Brandon in the second part. Yeah,
yeah.
It was Bruce at first.
Mm-hmm. You can tell the difference.
They sound, well, they have very different voices. So wrapping up this song, there is the one section with a different chord progression.
Okay.
The devil's water, that part, yeah?
Yeah.
You don't have to drink. Like these notes, it follows a different chord progression. We got like D sharp minor now.
Mm-hmm.
Same rules.
They say the devil's water, it ain't so sweet. You don't have to drink right now.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the things that feel off are the parts that should feel on. And when we hear this last bit, this is where we get the fancy D sharp minor chord. Every once in a feels perfect for our B major, but that note is a half step off of what it should be on that F sharp chord. So it clashes with the harmony, but for some reason sounds nice and stable.
But you can dip your feet every once in a little while.
Can I just let that play? I love this bass breakdown.
It's beautiful.
And then another one note guitar solo with D sharp, but then it goes to F sharp, which is, again, not in the chords, but in the B major chord. So yeah, there's other cool stuff in the song, like a nice chord substitution at the end, nice octave 80s style backing vocals, whatever. The melody has a weird relationship with the harmony that you don't see in, well, apparently you don't see it in any music written by women.
Apparently not. Yes. I wonder why.
Faux macho heart. No, it's like emotionally vulnerable European men. Right. Tears for Fears. And guys from Vegas.
And guys from Vegas.
Yeah. And,
you know, there's a lot of intersection. A lot of interesting stuff comes out of Vegas in the field of like social science research. I will say, even just going back, hearing that last bit you played, it just makes me want to go see the Killers live. I don't think I'm like a full fan of them, but I would love to see them perform live because I think that they would really energize the crowd in a really cool way. So
I'm sure Dave or someone else in our listenership will write in.
Dave.
Didn't he write in about the Men at Work? Wasn't that Dave?
Right.
Who was that? Or Mike?
Someone here has seen The Killers live and can say, Nicole's right.
I'm talking about listeners. You know who you are. Those of you that write in and give us concert updates. Yeah. Who's seen The Killers live?
And like, are when can good? We go? Like, can you get us on the list? I want to meet Brandon Flowers.
I can't wait to make plans with you to go and then at the last minute have to find somebody else.
Yeah,
right, because that's what I do.
I get a plus one to see the Killers backstage. Guess who I'm not taking, Mark?
Oh, okay,
you. I'm taking my friend Andy. Sorry.
What do we want to talk about? Is there anything you want to add on this?
I've been dying to talk
about
this.
Let's do it.
So this whole time, you're talking about like notes that should make sense but don't, and that you keep saying things like this isn't the correct note. Like this isn't the right note. But like, who are we? I know what you're going to say, but who are we to say what's right or not right? Like, it's the right note because that's the note they're playing in this song. So it is the right note for this song, even if it's the wrong note for the chord. But who gets to decide like what's right and wrong? And I know that in music theory, like obviously people decided like Mixo and Lydian like decided
Mr. Mixo. No, so you got it backwards, right?
Okay.
Music theory is not prescriptive. Music theory is descriptive.
Okay.
So music theory does not tell you what you should do. Music theory is used to explain what is happening and why it does work.
Well, when we talk about the song, you've said the words, this is the wrong note, multiple times.
Because what I'm talking about is where it diverts from the norm.
Okay.
So even other killer songs, you have your notes in the chord that tend to be the cornerstone of the melody.
Mm-hmm.
And in this song, they're doing the opposite of that,
okay,
where the notes in the chord don't fit. So when I say what I'm describing, if I'm using negative terminology, I'm
pejorative,
describing why the song is good,
right?
Why do I like this song? It might have something to do with the tension that is created by the uniqueness of this.
And like the texture of that, like dissonant, the harmonic dissonance.
I'm not going to use the word texture because that's
different.
Another thing I like about this song is the texture, which is the interactions of the elements of the instruments. But it creates a suspense kind of that when paired with the nostalgia that this song is evoking through other means, through the eighth note grindy beat that's very like 80s new wave, but the arpeggio guitar and the da-na-na-na-na-na-na, that's very Springsteen, combining with the sort of floatiness of this tense melody makes it really work. So I'm not talking about bad or breaking rules. I'm talking about breaking expectations.
Yes.
Right.
And I love that idea of breaking expectation. It leads me down a path to so many avenues to discuss like psychosocial themes with this song. And there's one or two that I really want to dwell on, but this song brings up so much stuff in like the adolescent developmental psych world. So it talks a lot about this idea of personal fable in adolescence and this idea of imaginary audience, which are things that we label like commonalities of the adolescent experience. So a personal fable is this belief that everything you do like speaks to your destiny and is uniquely important and uniquely yours. So it's like this main character energy, like this main character story, right? And that comes up in the lyrics of the song a little bit. We talk about this idea of invincibility fable in adolescence, this like that nothing bad's ever going to happen to you, that you're kind of invincible and you grow out of that as your brain develops more.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Why are we suddenly using the word fable? We talk about like, what are the things called like biases? Mm-hmm. We talk about distortions, but in this context, you're using the word fable, which is really interesting it's about the story you tell yourself, right? But that doesn't seem like that comes up in other like delusions humans have or whatever.
No, yeah, fable, like the word itself, like from, I'm sure it comes up elsewhere, but I mainly use it in the, what I know about it is in this like adolescent identity development moment where we're developing our own narratives of who we are in the world. And in adolescence, you are, so at, we've been adolescents from 12 to 18, which is like a huge developmental window, like huge, like big range.
Lots happened.
And in that developmental window, you're really focusing on figuring out who you are and learning about your personal identity, learning about like trying on different roles, trying on different characters and seeing which one is the best fit for you to choose essentially to move on into adulthood with. And a lot of the things that happen during this time are so formative for us moving forward. And it does become like the story you tell yourself about your adolescence might not be an objective point of view. It is entirely subjective. Your adolescent experience is from your lens in a very egocentric point of view, which means that you are the main character of the story. You are like the lead in the narrative. Even if everything else around you is different from what's normal, you set normal.
Right.
Your point of view is the normative experience, even if it's an outlier experience. And that references what you're talking about in this song harmonically, in that the melody is setting normal, even if the chords are telling us something different. Does that make sense, that connection?
Yeah. Just, so I'm thinking about it, though, because this song, I think I already mentioned, like, I think this song, the lyrics are a little mystifying and the video doesn't help. The video is like, set in Mexico and there's this woman whose loved one is like passed, but then he maybe comes back and like it's this whole like arc of their the rise and fall and rise again of their relationship. It's very interesting, like short film kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it seems like this song is about changing your expectations, right? Because, you know, he doesn't look a thing like Jesus, but he talks like a gentleman like you imagined when you were young. And so like if he's talking about this current relationship that I think we're talking about a woman here, who had this fantasy, this archetype in her head that he would be a gentleman, he would do this. Oh, and he kind of looks like Jesus, but like, okay, he doesn't look like Jesus, but he still kind of talks like that idealized.
Yeah.
And does that change over time? And I don't know, like, I don't know how the devil's water, I don't know how that fits in with this really, but it's interesting. It's very, some of these lyrics are very like Heartland. I can imagine like a Springsteen kind of, we're burning down the highway skyline on the back of a hurricane. Like that's like a George Thorogood lyric or something like that, right?
I can make some connections to those lyrics because I think that in this adolescent moment, which I'm like putting this song in mainly because I heard it when I was an adolescent, right? But we do like idealize romantic partners and like romantic partners that we have in high school and like our first romantic relationships are often like they do set the benchmark for our romantic relationships moving forward for better or for worse. So to say he doesn't look a thing like Jesus, like, but he talks like a gentleman. Maybe as a kid, you held up Jesus as like an idealized form.
Sure.
So maybe when you're striving for a romantic partner, you're looking for an idealized form and you're realizing he isn't that, but he still is a good guy. So maybe that's okay. Right. And the devil's water piece is like these other outliers that are going to come in and try to take that person's status position, that romantic partner status position, and take over. And we like reject that. And we stay true to who we really cling to, the persona that we fell in love with when we were young, which is the name of the song. So I'm trying to bring it back.
Which
to
is
that.
Interesting. That's that line. It's like about that, but it's anti about that. Like, I feel like the message of the song is like breaking free of what you had to be true when you were young.
Right.
But like, But that's the line they keep, they end the section on. That's the title of the song, right? Let me wrap my head around this. Like, what was the term? What was the fable? There were two types of fables.
There's a personal fable, and then like imaginary audience is another fable.
Imaginary, that's funny because way back, what was it, last month or whatever, 2 months ago when we did our feedback episode and we were talking about like, oh, wouldn't it be awesome to like play back in high school, play the boombox. Everybody has to hear the music that identifies
me.
Right,
exactly.
It's like your projected fable.
Yes.
So the imaginary audience is your personal fable as put forth into the world, right? Is that right?
Oh gosh, wait till you hear about Spotlight Effect.
Is that, that's like main character syndrome. Okay, let's come back to
it. Yeah, it's
so
all related.
You actually, I think that might've come up in season one briefly.
Yeah. So I talk about this stuff all day, every day.
We need the AI to like find keywords and put them in bold in the transcript.
Okay, this is great. You're really starting to make some connections, Mark. You're doing a really great job.
I'm listening. So this song maybe is about the disconnect between the personal fable and your reality. And you should be embracing that disconnect and not clinging to the reality. Because we open, yes, there's this, he doesn't look a thing like Jesus line.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the, you sit there in your heartache, waiting for some beautiful boy to save you from your own ways.
Mm-hmm.
You play forgiveness. Watch it now. I don't remember the line.
Yeah.
Here he comes or something. We start from the perspective of someone who seems to be unhappy, right?
Yeah.
A failed relationship or something like that. Loneliness, maybe. But the potential to make it impossible to get out of that because you are too stuck in your previous assumptions, your previous narrative, your myth making, mm-hmm. your fable of what your expectations tell you have to need in that moment.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't look like Jesus, maybe it wouldn't work, but let's let go. And the fact that the guy's hair is cut shorter like Brandon Flowers, mm-hmm. maybe he's all right.
And the idea of personal fable really is not so much like the whole story that you're painting yourself into, but the idea that your story is unique and different than everyone else's. That your experience, and an adolescent often feels this, that like, you're ruining my life. This is the worst thing that ever happened to anybody. These are common like tenets of adolescence. But really what the lyrics are telling this character in this story that he's singing is we've seen this story before. Like you need to get out of your own way and just let this person, this romantic partner be who they are. And that's going to help you. Right. We're looking at this idea of romantic idealization, which happens quite a bit during adolescence, that you need like a savior for a partner. And what the lyrics are telling this main character here is that you don't need a literal savior. You just need someone that's a good guy, right? And they're going to help you out. And we talk about this in the terms of like identity formation, in terms of our romantic relationships and how they help build and foster our identity specific in adolescence, that you start thinking that your identity is part of a couple when you can just be independent and have that couple, have that partner like support you in your own narrative.
Yeah. And I think easy for me to say as someone has an absolutely perfect wife who could not ever be anything.
I've met her. She's ideal.
But,
she's the ideal partner.
But I feel like people who struggle in adulthood with romance and things like that might be people that struggle to let the ideal become more realistic.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's the only reason someone might have love life struggles as an adult, but you know, everybody has that friend or whatever who's still like, God, well, nobody likes me or I can't find the right person. And like, you know, well, people are flawed, right? And not everybody's going to look like Jesus.
That's why strippers are successful. Because a stripper, like...
Record scratch, wait, what?
No, because it's like it's an idealized version. It's a character of a human woman. So, or a human male that doesn't...
Not complicated by personal
flaws. That doesn't
like
leave their dishes
like
in the sink or leave their dirty laundry around or like have trauma or death.
Sure.
It's just an icon of a sexualized creature, which is maybe in adolescence what we're taught to look for. And then as we get older, we realize, hey, no, we're all three dimensional. And it's that three dimensionality that like creates long term love and creates long term bonding because you realize, hey, if this person can love me even with my flaws or love me because of my flaws, that leads to like a richer relationship. So in this story, we're hearing of a young girl that's trying to idealize a partner, doesn't look a thing like Jesus, right? And that's what I was looking for. But he still has depth and is a gentleman. We can love each other no matter what. And I think that the dissonance between what we're seeing melodically and the story that he's telling is we're trying to find balance, both in the relationship and like the tension musically is kind of heightening that cognitive tension that we're seeing in this character.
Hmm.
And that is something that's pretty common of adolescent and early adulthood, because your individual identity is still forming. So how are you expected to pick a partner when you're not developed yourself? You know?
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I'm trying to think of what the perspective of the narrator of this is. Is this an older brother, a parent, a friend,
just would a
be lover? Because there's this sort of sense of almost advice giving, right? And the that bridge, the devil's water, it ain't so sweet. I think you don't have to drink right now, but you can dip your feet every once in a little while. Mm. So there's like this sense of like, maybe not yet, but maybe just try and see how it goes.
Or maybe like...
And the devil's water, it's like it's like a bad thing as opposed to that Jesus thing, but maybe that's actually what she needs.
Or maybe like as a teenager, as someone that's... Maybe he's speaking to his younger self if you like change the genders around a little bit. But this idea that maybe you need to make some mistakes in young adulthood and adolescence in terms of romantic partnership, in terms of friendship, in a more meta sense, right? That sometimes it's okay to have failed relationships and have bad friends and have people that get you into trouble, because that, while it can be fun, it teaches you, it puts you, it like course corrects you onto the right path. Just like this song tonally is trying to like find the path.
And I think this does actually...
And it does.
The expectations being off of what you're like, to that point of like music theory telling us we should play the right chord, like that's not true. And in this case, the change of the expectation helps make the song work in the same way that like the advice he's giving is like, maybe that like even those wrong moments, those bad moments will like find your path or whatever.
I mean, sometimes it's interesting. Bad things feel good. And that's what you had said that earlier. Sometimes like bad sounds like feel good.
Hey, I mean, I like the sharp nine chord at the beginning of Here Comes Your Man, like, and that doesn't, it's not a real like consonant chord, that's for sure.
But like it just feels, it makes you feel whole and it makes you feel good. And sometimes bad things interpersonally do too. And it's okay to like have those experiences for sure. And a lot of times we have those experiences when we're young because fundamentally our brains aren't developed enough to stop us from doing bad things. Like it's not a personality trait, it's literally biology. Is that your brain pushes you to run the red light when you're a teenager. That's like the point.
Yikes.
So you learn how to course correct moving forward and you learn how to regulate moving forward.
Is everybody still alive, Nicole?
Is everyone still
from
alive?
From the red light you ran?
Yeah, when you were 16? I actually was very cautious as a kid because of anxiety and trauma.
I've definitely accidentally full on ran a red. I've never on purpose run a red.
No,
not counting the yellow turning in, like, look, nobody take me to
New
court.
England thing,
No, it's not. It's everywhere. Traffic, I feel like, moves better when you do that, actually. Yeah. Like, keep things moving. Don't unnecessarily clog up the...
No, I often would, like, stop at a stop sign waiting for it to turn green. Like, I would get confused.
That is funny.
Yeah, I like, mean, I was more that kid.
I mean, don't get on...
It's probably the weed.
Don't play, like... I was going to say, don't play a lot of Mario Kart or something.
I'm just like
or
waiting.
Grand Theft Auto and then go, okay, time to take the kids to somewhere, because then you're like trying to like cut somebody off or throw a shell at somebody in the road.
No.
Like it messes with your
sense
of perception.
I haven't thrown a shell at someone driving for years. So
just a banana peel.
Yeah.
All right. Anything good?
I have like
to end on?
Some like Las Vegas stuff.
Okay. I more like, than Mario Kart. Okay. What do you got?
Well, like, I don't know. I have like two different Las Vegas anecdotes.
Do it.
So one's a bummer, but
jeez.
There was some really interesting social science research from Emil Durkheim right when like psychology was coming up in like the 1900s. And he was talking about how Las Vegas has the highest rate of suicidality of anywhere in the United States.
Wow.
So that means like the most people who statistically like more people kill themselves in Las Vegas or try to than any other place.
Yikes.
And the reason might be surprising.
It's not gambling loss. It's not profound senses of loneliness or whatever because of different, I don't know.
You're close. Like, it's definitely not gambling loss, but it's because, well, when you were talking about how these bands like formed in Las Vegas, my first thought was like, who's from Las Vegas, right? Like, who grew up there? You don't really think of it.
You know, it's funny because we grew up in SoCal, right? Mm-hmm. But I went to Vegas all the time.
I bet, like for fun.
But it's not because of that. It's because my grandmother and my aunt moved there for like a while, and like raised, like my aunt raised her kids there. Like, so we would visit, I would go to like Thanksgiving in Vegas and weird stuff. And I'm like, whoa, it's cold in Vegas in November.
Yeah, and like, it's just like hits different.
It's just
when
a different
that.
Thing than going to
and,
be a
and
tourist.
And that's yeah. what Emil Durkheim found with his research, is there's a higher rate of suicidality in Las Vegas, not because of gambling loss or anything like that, but because it's so transient that people there don't have social support. And so, social support like will prevent suicide attempts when you
that's
have like
the
people.
Hypothesis, or that's like they,
that's what that's, he that's he proved that he wow. didn't have the hypothesis. He was just investigating it like ethnographically, and, that,
and there was a correlation big time between
he determined a causal correlation wow. between the transient nature of folks that live in Las Vegas full time and high rates of suicidality. So interesting. Not quippy or fun, but
so
it's
we need
really
some buoyant music to kind of pull. Okay, so yeah, get right. us out. We can't end the podcast.
No,
on that.
Another thing. Vegas. I used to sell stuff door to door, like framed artwork out of the back of my car. Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
Yeah, so I used to sell. I answered an ad in the paper called "Hippies with the Flow, Come and Work for Us." I was like, I'm a hippie. I can do that.
Okay.
And I went to this warehouse every day, and I picked up a bunch of framed Monet prints and put them in the back of my Ford Escort station wagon. And cold called, solicited local businesses to sort of sell these framed posters.
Okay.
And I was so good at it, like so good at it, that they tried to get me to drop out of college, which I didn't, to join them full time. And they gave me an incentive trip to go to Las Vegas. And I was 17 years old, maybe 18. Yeah, I was a freshman.
I mean, you were in college.
I was a freshman in college, but I was younger. So I went to Las Vegas and rode around in limos and went to fancy casinos with middle-aged men. It was very creepy. Sorry, Mom. And I tried to see Bob Dylan live there, but because I wasn't 21, I presented my fake ID, sorry, Mom, to go see Bob Dylan live. And they took it from me. They like confiscated. So I wasn't even trying to like buy alcohol. The old men were buying that for me.
You just wanted to see
sorry,
some
Mom.
Boomer folk rock.
And I just wanted to see Dylan. And they were like, this isn't you. I was like, yeah, it is. Because totally, and it wasn't. And they took my ID. I was so pissed.
Wow. Did you instead go to an 18-up show of The Killers? They would have been.
Oh, I wish, right?
They would have been like in their maybe early formation, pre-fame.
Right, but this is like, you know, to quote The Killers, when you were young, you made some stupid decisions.
Yeah, I don't think that's.
That's not what it's
about,
I mean, about, huh?
The okay. thing is, though, the most profound lyric that we should end the listeners on. Grammar corrections can happen later with the AI. Are we human or are we dancer?
Are we dancer?
Question mark.
I think in Vegas, I was trying to be dancer.
Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and hosted and produced by Mark Poppany. You can email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com and give us a follow on social media. Nevermind the Music is also part of the Lorehounds Network. Please join the conversation on their Discord server. Thanks for listening.